Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Now that the dust has settled on the trade deadline, how many real Super Bowl contenders do we have? Welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. Pearl, this is kind of it. Squads are set here. I mean, you get guys back from IR and stuff, but as far as making big moves, we saw a couple on Tuesday, which was obviously Indianapolis going all in on Sauce Gardner, the two first-round picks, and Dallas adding Quinnen Williams for a second-round pick and a first-round pick in 2027. And then Seattle, who added a really nice wide receiver weapon, and they're already one of the best teams in the NFC, and Rashid Shaheed. So
And Philadelphia.
And Philadelphia adding Jalen Phillips.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That happened a few days ago, so I get you. Get what you're saying.
Okay, so I guess, like, for me, the biggest two questions for Dallas, I'm going to pause on that. I'm going to go corporate speak. We're going to put a pin in that. I think this is more for next year and the year after with Quinnen Williams. You're already 3-5-1. It's going to be tough to dig yourself out of that hole. But for Indy and for Seattle, two teams that have really, we have not considered anywhere close to Super Bowl contenders in years now, who do you think actually got closer?
Seattle. Because Seattle doesn't have Kansas City looming at some point. Doesn't have Buffalo looming at some point. The AFC is so top heavy. The AFC as a whole is not great. You said we have all these new Super Bowl contenders. I'm like, that's great. Who's going to get the call in the fourth quarter when the Bills play the Chiefs in the AFC title game?
Oh, it's going to come down to the refs.
I'm just saying, no. It's going to come down to those two teams. Because recent history has shown that those two teams rise to the top. So I feel like the Colts are going to have a harder time getting out of that. The NFC is a bit more erratic. You know, it hasn't been Chiefs. The NFC's been the Rams. It's been the Eagles. It's been the Niners. So I feel like this is a closer competition in the NFC, and Seattle could find their way to come out of that. It's going to be hard, but they do have the quarterback's playing well, but really they want to win Ravens style. They want to win with defense and running, and they can do that.
See, for me, it might be Indy because while I don't really believe that Daniel Jones is a Super Bowl winning quarterback, I really don't see that for Sam Darnold either. I think there's a ceiling on both of these guys. But you mentioned that the AFC is top heavy, but look at the two teams at the top. This feels kind of flawed. A Buffalo team matching up against Indianapolis, let's just think about it. Jonathan Taylor could run all over the Bills. I mean, they could control that game, especially if it's in Indy. And Kansas City right now has shown that they can be vulnerable when you get to Patrick Mahomes. The offensive line for Kansas City lost two guys during that Bills game, and they didn't do anything to address that on Tuesday at the trade deadline.
Yeah, but they never do. I mean, they...
And it's cost them a couple Super Bowls.
I know, but they still get to the Super
Bowl.
That
is true.
You know, I tend to believe that trade deadline and free agency, things like this, the teams that make noise, it doesn't always work. I mean, the reality is they you can win on a Tuesday, but that doesn't always translate to winning on a Sunday. You could trademark that, Manny.
Get on top of that. Actually, I'm glad you brought up acquisitions and going all in because it goes perfectly into Maggie and Perloff's King of the Mountain.
Who is the King of the Mountain? Maggie and Perloff search for the greatest NFL team of all time.
What a run for the 84 49ers. They were King of the Mountain. And we'll always have our fun 76ers 49ers mashup. Manny hit the wrong button. All right. We'll always get our fun 49ers music from the 84 Niners. They were King of the Mountains for 5 weeks, EJ? 6 weeks? And then the 85 Bears came along and they dethroned the 84 Niners. So we got the 85 Bears, Pearl, are now the King of the Mountain. We gave the wheel a spin yesterday and it landed on the 94 San Francisco 49ers. But first, a look back. Here's your 85 Bears.
Mike! Man, I'm going to kill him. Wilbur, I'm going to get there first. Dent was saying, no, I'm getting there first. And it was going on and on. And Hampton was saying, no, I'm getting there first. And I'm looking at these guys and I'm saying, wait. The guy is bleeding. The guy is bleeding at the mouth. The guy is bleeding at the nose. You don't have to kill the guy. We don't care. He's the quarterback. We're going to get him. That's what we do.
Mike Singletary, hell of a storyteller, talking about his defensive teammates on that 85 Bears team, arguing about who's going to kill the quarterback first or the most. Obviously, 85 Bears, one of the most iconic teams in NFL history, dominant, you know, the Super Bowl against the New England Patriots, 46-10, just a no-doubter. Defense ranked first in the NFL, points allowed, yards allowed, and takeaways. Six Hall of Famers on that team. They are the king of the mountain for now. Today, they face the 94 San Francisco 49ers.
Quick pass, slanted, Jerry Rice, another touchdown! Steve Young is now number one all-time with six touchdown passes.
Mike Shanahan at the end of the game was upset because it was only six touchdown passes because he wanted eight.
Every guy in here made a commitment. You know you did. There were times when it was dark. It was really dark. We turned back into each other's face and committed to each other. You knew we had to do it this way. This is the greatest feeling in the world. Is it not? 39 days! Hey, I share this with every one of you guys. Everyone in this room made a commitment. And we're there. And no one can ever, ever take it away from us. Ever!
Ever. Steve Young, man, he was a two-time MVP at this point, Pearl, going into that 94 season. But obviously, the 49ers had lost back-to-back NFC Championship games to, of course, the Dallas Cowboys. Yeah. And while Steve Young was, you know, had sat behind Joe Montana famously, but then was winning MVPs but could not win that Super Bowl, and you could tell it just weighed on him, you know? He's very open about it. That was a tricky situation. I can't even imagine a situation like that in modern day. Where you've got these two Hall of Famers on the same team, both in their prime. And Joe Montana had won the four Super Bowls, and then Steve Young sitting there behind him. I mean, it's just crazy. It feels like a different era. You could not do that today.
Probably the all-time quarterback controversy.
Steve
Young was, but it reminds me a little of Sam Darnold. Until he got to San Francisco, was a huge bust. I mean, he was like an all-time bust. So, but getting into the debate a little bit.
Yeah.
It's weird because we had the Bears knock out a previous version of this team, but I'm having trouble. I'll be honest. How do you place the 94 Niners within the whole picture of who the Niners were? Because part of me, my first instinct is, well, they didn't have Bill Walsh. They had George Seifert. So you immediately downgrade him. If Bill Walsh can't beat the 85 Bears, how is George Seifert going to beat the 85 Bears?
This was a really interesting team though, because there was a time early in the season of 94 where Steve Young actually got benched during a game. You know, George Seifert actually really had to put his own mark on this team and handle Steve Young in a way that ultimately ended up doing the best thing for them, which is got Steve Young really ticked off. People thought that he wasn't fiery enough and that he didn't care, not that he didn't care, but that he wasn't a leader in a certain way. And Steve Young got so mad at getting benched in that game against your Philadelphia Eagles that he came out and was like house on fire the next week against Detroit, and that was a turning point. But one of the things I brought up about the 94 49ers, it's not exactly applicable to the trade deadline necessarily, but this was a team that went all in after losing two NFC championship games back-to-back against the Cowboys. Brought in Deion Sanders.
They brought in
27 new players for this 94 team, including Ken Norton was the other one. So they recognized the opportunity and the amount of pressure that was building on Steve Young. And, you know, the season didn't even start off that great. I think they were like 4-2 and they were kind of middling. And then they ended up really strong. And 13-3 was the final record. And, of course, San Diego, the Chargers, and Stan Humphries were no match.
Yeah, fodder.
Yeah.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
Yeah.
I just watched a Cowboys documentary coming into the season on Netflix. If Jerry Jones had not let Jimmy Johnson walk out of that building, is the 94 Niners even in this list? I mean, let's be honest.
Pearl.
I know, but the Cowboys, conveniently for those Niners, I'd also, too, so their best player, obviously, is Jerry Rice.
Yeah.
Jerry's, I just looked up, he's 32 on this team.
He'd play for another 10 years.
That's factually true. Yeah. I know, but if you're talking the greatest of all time, this is, to me, not the greatest Niners team of all time, despite that Super Bowl romp. So I'm going to have trouble surpassing the 85 Bears. This is a 94 Niners all-time team, no doubt. But we're talking about going against one of the great, great teams of all time. And the funny thing is, you mentioned Shanahan. The coaching staff was amazing.
Yep.
The head coach, I don't know. George Seifert, I still to this day, I have no real impression of him. But Shanahan and Kubiak below him, I mean, look at what those guys then did for the NFL. They created basically the modern NFL. Shanahan begat Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, and Kubiak begat a million people. So they took Bill Walsh to the next level. But George Seifert did not really do it. He looked like a businessman or a librarian trying to be an NFL coach.
Do
you ever watch a press conference with George Seifert?
Yeah,
just no way that would work today. He was an odd fit there. I mean,
he's not like Ditka, I'll give you that.
Yeah. That's why I love this 94 team, and Steve Young was amazing, but let's be honest, they're going against the 85 Bears.
I know. I think that the Bears are going to be remembered as more dominant, but this 94 team, I don't think there was the type of pressure maybe on the Bears that there was on this team, this 94 team, and because of Steve Young and what they needed to prove and how they could not get past the Dallas Cowboys. I don't remember the Bears beyond just like, you know, the Packers and their divisional stuff, that having like that one team where you're just like, cannot get over the hump, and then they actually did have to go through Dallas on their way to winning the Super Bowl. No. So there you go. Maggie Perloff, King of the Mountain, 85 Bears now take on the 94 49ers.
The Bears had a Bill Parcells and Joe Gibbs problem, as I recall.
That's true. Many
people did. They ran into
Joe
those
Gibbs,
like crazy good and Parcells, too.
Yep.
Yeah, they ran in. So you're right, but they didn't have the nemesis that the Niners did. So you're right. Give them a lot of credit for that. But this is a hard thing to be king of the mountain, man. Look at Joe Gibbs' package in these shorts right here. Did I say that?
That's not AI, buddy.
Look at Joe Gibbs' package. Yeah.
One of my favorite, this is so silly, but because you guys know that I love sequels, I always feel a little bit of a kindred spirit with Steve Young. He and I have nothing in common.
Okay.
But we have this in common. Steve Young had like a quirk that he watched the same movie over and over again before games to calm himself down.
Got it.
That movie was a sequel.
BYU.
Beverly Hills Cop 2?
Nope. Oh, I wish. For Steve's
sake.
Please
don't tell me it's Caddyshack 2.
It's not Caddyshack 2. Okay. It is City Slickers 2, The Legend of Curly's Gold.
I have that movie on DVD.
So does Steve Young.
That one was good, as I recall. How was City Slickers 2? Or probably not that good.
No sequels are good. This is what you guys keep telling me outside of The Godfather 2.
No comedy sequels are good. Well, generally, that's hard to do.
So anyway, I always thought that was a weird quirk.
Except for Police Academy, of course.
I always find myself kind of feeling like rooting for Steve Young in these instances because I can't even imagine these moments. But then you meet Joe Montana. We were lucky enough to interview Joe Montana at the Super Bowl a couple years ago, Pearl. And you feel for Joe Montana because in some ways, Tom Brady is so eclipsed Joe Montana, who was always thought of as just hands down the quarterback, the winner, along with Jerry Rice. Like, people call Jerry the GOAT, the greatest player ever, no matter what position. And then Tom Brady kind of came in and not erased Joe Montana, but has totally surpassed Joe Montana.
No, I feel so bad for Joe Montana. Poor guy.
You didn't feel for him a little bit that time we talked to him at the Super Bowl? He's talking about playing with his bicep ripped off the bone.
Yeah, it's because he's carrying those rings on his hands all the time, and it weighs him down. No, I don't feel bad for Joe Montana. I would have felt bad for Steve Young if he never got a Super Bowl. So there is a feel-good aspect to this 94 Niners, but there's just, I can't imagine what the 85 Bears would have done to that short passing game. Jerry Rice comes over the middle. He would have gotten hunted if they ever played in 85. But then again, then the 85 Bears didn't win again, so maybe there was something there.
I feel like
the 94 Niners, they're a top 20 all-time team, where the Bears are a top 3 all-time team.
I do feel like that team, the Niners, they don't get enough credit for being one of the greatest offenses of all time.
Yeah.
They scored the most points in the history of the postseason. That record stood literally until, hate to bring them up again, Perloff's Eagles last season broke that record. So this is, we're talking about the explosion of offense. We've all seen all these passing stats and stuff. The 94 Niners scored all those points back in 1994, and that record for the most points in a postseason run has stood the test of time pretty much until last year. So when we think about passing offense, if you think about efficiency, yes, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't obviously, you know, Bill Walsh, but Mike Shanahan, two-time Super Bowl winning head coach, awesome offensive play caller. This was a deadly offense, especially Ricky Waters running back too, coming out of the backfield catching the passes and run. They were a good team.
Yeah. How many Hall of Famers? Sorry, I don't have it for me on defense. Brian Young, right?
Yeah, Brian Young was the only. Brian Young and Dion. So they have four Hall of Fame players: Steve Young, Dion, Jerry, and Brian Young.
Don't forget, you know, I had two sons.
I don't know if Shiloh was born yet. And then you got Eddie DeBarlo, of course, is the other Hall of Famer on this organization.
Yeah, and then I know their D coordinator was Ray Rhodes, because he, the next year, went to the Eagles and was a horrible head coach.
That game, Maggie was mentioning that Steve Young got benched, was against those Eagles. Yeah. They got destroyed 40-8.
Early in the season. Another fun fact here, and I know this was as of a couple years ago, but I don't know if it's still the same. So I started looking back at the Super Bowl, because the 94 San Francisco 49ers were 18.5-point favorites in the Super Bowl. We kind of went through a stretch there, Pearl, where there were some big blowouts in the Super Bowl. And
thank you, Bills.
Stan Humphries was the quarterback for the San Diego Chargers. And I always thought that was kind of funny, because it's like Stan Humphries against Steve Young. Like, there was not a chance here. And that was a great team. It obviously had... Ronnie Harrison was on that team, and Junior Seau was on that team, and there were definitely a lot of great players. But Stan Humphries always kind of sounds kind of like someone sitting on his recliner, you know? Does Stan Humphries sound like a guy who's going to lead you to a win over the vaunted San Francisco 49ers? But guess what? Do you know what Stan Humphries ended up doing after his football career, Pearl?
Selling insurance.
What?
Stan Humphries, I don't know if he's still doing it, Stan Humphries became an assistant women's basketball coach in Monroe, Louisiana, University of Louisiana, Monroe, assistant women's basketball coach. Apparently, his daughter got really into basketball. He loved basketball and made his way onto the bench for a women's basketball team. And I think he coached there for a while.
That's wild.
Isn't that a fun fact about Stan Humphries?
Before that, he was the head coach of that same of his daughter's high school. No, so
head coach of the high school, I could see, but to be a college
basketball
assistant,
though. He's not a football. He's a football player.
Hey, EJ, I've seen more Hall of Famers. I don't have it again in front of me. Was Ricky Jackson on this team and Richard Dent? They brought in some old guys. Merton Hanks didn't make the Hall of Fame, but he's an all neck Hall of Famer.
First ballot, all very long necks.
I mean, that's the whole thing about the Niners dynasty, too. Did they have the defense to, you know, that's the Bill Walsh thing. Like, did they have enough defense, really? Ronnie Lott was gone at that point to really compete in this. I'm obviously standing for this 85 Bears. I want them to win this whole thing. I'm going to be honest.
Oh, come on.
You've got to be objective, Pearl. No, I just think that, just in my memory, like, you know how it is. If you're doing singular seasons, the 85 Bears is the first one you talk about.
888-710-4ISN. That's a totally different conversation. But today we are doing, who is the greatest team of all time? Well, similar conversation.
It sounds like the exact same conversation.
Versus 94 49ers. Well, we're doing today. Let's just do these two teams.
Keep it focused on today.
Focused on today.
By the way, I think this is the first matchup we have where a player will be facing themselves. Because Richard Dent, in his prime, is not facing Richard Dent.
No, they signed him on. I don't think he did anything for them. They brought in some old guys.
He played two games for the team.
Dion could play himself at some point, right? Dion is on multiple teams.
Yes. Yes, he. There is very likely.
So this is the first. If the Niners win today, Dion could, who knows, face himself next week.
Yeah, and Dion played both ways, so Dion could cover himself. In theory.
This is some Black Mirror stuff, guys. Like, get out of here with it.
Wow.
888-710-4ISN. 888-710-4476. Maggie and Perloff only covering the most up to date stories, which is who was a better team, the 85 Bears against the 94 San Francisco 49ers. You're not getting that anywhere else.
Not today, anyway.
Meanwhile, we will get to a story that, to be honest, not only making huge waves in the sports world in general, but also in our office. It's the Maggie and Pearl.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Love show.
Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff Show. All right. It's been a wild week. You know, Maggie, we haven't talked in a little bit about the Penn State opening. Obviously, they're not going to make an official hire during the season, but there was a time when everybody under the sun was coming up for this opening, including possibly Urban Meyer, and our buddy Zach Gelb got right in there.
Yeah, let's talk to Zach, obviously host of the Zach Gelb Show on many of these same Infinity Sports Network channels. And Zach, thanks for waking up early for us today. So tell us the latest. You're in a back and forth right now with none other than Urban Meyer. So what was the report you had originally about Urban's possible interest in the Penn State head coach opening?
Yes. So my original report was last week when I said it on my show, is that I had two sources tell me that Urban Meyer was interested and had a strong interest in the Penn State job. But ultimately, when he talked to the powers that be at Penn State in the hiring process, when they had their preliminary discussions, and then it continued a little bit further than that, when the topic of NIL came up, they didn't view him as a fit and a desired candidate anymore because of the way that he would navigate NIL and some of his answers on that front.
Okay, so Penn State said no thank you to Urban Meyer, according to your sources.
Yes, and I 1,000% stand by that, and I understand that Urban is going to reject it, and I understand why he's going to reject it, which I thought it was interesting. In his denial of the story, he claims that I mentioned the senator that he met with, which I never said that in my two-minute report. And then he wants me to name my sources too, which I'm not going to do, because then you would never have sources again because people trust you with this information. But when it comes to Urban Meyer shooting down the story, I understand why he would do it, because he's arguably one of the greatest college football coaches of all time. And if he won a job and got rejected by the job or had interest in the job at a bare minimum, not a good look for Urban Meyer. I wouldn't want that out there either.
Zach, can you explain a little bit? Why would Urban Meyer, I know he's old school, but why would he not be good enough at NIL?
Well, the way that I look at it is, why is Nick Saban no longer in college football? Because he didn't want to deal with name, image, and likeness and the transfer portal. So there could be a resistance to the structure that's going on. And I don't know exactly what Urban Meyer's plans were for NIL. But with that being said, he's the guy that is rooted, if you watch the Florida documentary, it was his way or the highway. At Ohio State, it was his way or the highway. Now the players have more power than ever. And look at what happened in the NFL when it wasn't his way or the highway. I think Urban Meyer is one of the greatest college coaches of all time, but he was an unmitigated disaster in the NFL when the structure is a little bit different and the players have more power. And he thought he could just roll it in and do whatever he did at college. And he'd even last the whole season with Shad Khan and the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, well, how could we all ever forget Urban Meyer in the bar with the young woman who's definitely cringe?
I was going to go when he kicked the kicker. That was
that
the one
was
that
another
jumps
one.
To mind for me as well.
That also led to a lawsuit. Zach Gelb is joining us, host of the Zach Gelb Show, has broke some news that Urban Meyer had interest in the Penn State opening, but it was Penn State who said no thank you, did not think that, you know, he was up on the modern times enough to be handling NIL and the latest changes in college football. Zach, it's funny. So you made your report. You're well-sourced, right? And then Urban, in his podcast, said, well, that's not true. But he did mention about meeting with the senator from Pennsylvania. He kind of just offered that. Oh, we have a little bit of Urban Meyer, Zach. We're going to play it for the audience. Here's Urban Meyer talking about the senator from PA.
Who is the guy again? My phone started blowing up. What's
Zach
his name?
Zach Gelb, I believe, was his name.
Yeah,
we're giving him some credit right now, apparently.
Yeah. And you got to give him credit. And he has two sources that said that I met with the senator that we became friends. Rob, you were there with Dave McCormick when we covered a Penn State game, and I stayed in touch with him, and we had breakfast in the Capitol, and we talked politics, Mark. And then And then there's another one. He said, the source says that I had conversations with Penn State about the NIL, and I didn't know how to handle the NIL or something. So,
come on,
first of all, that never happened.
Figure it out, man. How do you not handle NIL?
How do we get the two sources on our show here?
Very interesting, Zach. I mean,
by the way, and Zach, just to defend you, like a college football coach, they're trustworthy. They never say the utilitarian.
Oh yeah, thing. Let me tell you, Urban Meyer, he just screams to be, you know, the definition of trustworthy. Yeah. And that's why I said I issued a response yesterday. If Urban wants to be that ridiculous and do the whole name your sources game, well, why don't we do a charity event at Urban Meyer's Pine House? Very famous Pine House, obviously, was in the news once. And we hook you up to a lie detector test. We'll raise a bunch of money for charity. And you tell me that you were never interested at all in the Penn State job, right? If it's that easy, let's do that, Coach.
Well, if Urban Meyer's taking a lie detector test, I have about 15 other questions that I'd love to ask him, mostly stuff about what happened at the University of Florida. But Zach Gelb is on the line with us, breaking some news this last week, and that Urban Meyer responded to it, that Urban was interested in the Penn State job. So you know what this makes me think, Zach? Maybe that Urban Meyer is not done coaching and would go somewhere else, who maybe is so blinded maybe by his fame, celebrity, and what he did at Florida, Ohio State, and the like, that he might actually get back into coaching. That's what this made me think.
Yeah, so that I don't know. I just knew that the Penn State job was of interest for him. He has a lot of admiration for the late Joe Paterno as well, and obviously Penn State is one of those big brands. Like, I don't think Urban Meyer is as desperate to coach where he's going to take some small job or he's going to take a job that isn't in an Urban Meyer category. But obviously, Penn State is one of those big boy jobs. It's not Ohio State, obviously. It wasn't Florida when he had Florida rolling, but it's a job that's looking for a coach to get them over a hump to win a national championship. This is the ironic part about it. I actually think Urban Meyer would be a phenomenal hire for Penn State. Right. I think it'd be a really good hire to try to go win a championship. But that's where we are today. And I just find it funny how strong he is on the denial. And he had all these people texting him, too. And people are bringing this to his desk. Well, he definitely listened to my report. And in my report, I never brought up the senator. So that's where his denial was very sloppy to start, because I never said the senator. I have I think it's a minute and 47 seconds that we put out there of my full report, and never in those, you know, under 2 minutes did I ever say anything about this meeting with the senator.
Yeah. I like the name of the podcast, Triple Option Podcast. So I got to give you that. I'll give that Urban that. So do you have any insight or even an opinion on who will be the Penn State coach? If they don't want an Urban Meyer type, what either who is a name or the kind of type that they might be looking at?
Yeah, so I think there's a few names that stand out to me. Brian Hartline, who Urban Meyer would actually advocate for. He's the offensive coordinator, obviously, at Ohio State. But if they want more of an established name, it would not shock me if the Missouri coach, Eli Drinkwitz, hits it off with Pat Kraft and the president at Penn State in the interview process. He seems like a guy that could be a good fit for Penn State. I will say, I don't think this one is likely, but people have been suggesting it. Mike Elko, who's at A&M, and I think the timeline of this, and Elko, right, he's got Northeast roots, but Elko was the DC at A&M, then went to Duke, now back at A&M as the coach and has a team that's undefeated right now. If he's in the college football playoff, it's like, how much longer can Penn State actually wait? Maybe they throw Jeff Brohm into that conversation as well. Would a guy like Brent Key be interested, looking for a bigger job at Georgia Tech? I'll tell you, a guy that I think would be a rock star, and I'll be curious if he leaves Arizona State, and maybe it's not for Penn State, but it could be for Auburn, where I believe he spent a year there for. Maybe it is at Florida. A guy like Kenny Dillingham, to me, what he's been able to do the last few years at Arizona State has been very impressive, and maybe he could bring in Sam Levitt in the transfer portal. So there's some names out there, but right now I think I would zero in for Penn State if I just had to make an educated guess that either Eli Drinkwitz or Brian Hartline being the next coach.
Well, Zach, congrats, because like, it's so funny that, you know, you are double sourced on this report. We don't know you. You're not someone who just makes up stuff, throws stuff up against the wall. Obviously we know you're buttoned up here, and Urban Meyer's just like, didn't happen. Like, you know, you got to come with a little something a little bit bigger than that to me, I think, when you're making these denials. But Zach, we got to get to the real reason we wanted you on, which is the other day, your producer, Mike Samter, actually hosted an hour of radio. Scale of 1 to 10, how did Samter do?
Ew!
I didn't actually listen to it.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. You're being honest.
I'm being fully honest. Yeah. I did not listen to it yet. I think it was like about 35 minutes because I was told it was so horrible that they were like, you need to stop what you're doing and get back into the studio. No, I'm just kidding. I heard that it went well. I got a pretty cool opportunity to go on someone's podcast. And I didn't think that I could say no to this person and do their podcast. And they could only do it during the first hour of my show. So the first 30 minutes, I wasn't there.
I have a quick question.
And that was who? Joe Rogan?
Yeah. Theo Vaughn.
No, it was not Joe Rogan. Maybe it was Theo Vaughn, you know?
Zach, I have a quick question. You might use this content on your show later today. Who has an easier schedule moving forward, Notre Dame or the New England Patriots? Because both of them basically have buys until the postseason.
See, I know what you're doing here.
Yeah, you know exactly what I'm doing.
And Maggie, I'm sure you have sympathy for me.
Yeah.
It's been 5 long years for me with just bad football.
All right, and, you know, Zach, it's been like great having you on the show. Zach Gelb, the host of the Zach Gelb Show.
Slash Patriots fan.
I can't believe the Patriots are actually leading the division again, and they're good again.
They're not that good. They are feasting on bad teams.
Thank you, Zach. Did you actually hang up on him?
Oh, yeah. No, he's gone.
Okay, goodbye.
Zach, he didn't get to hear that?
No, I made the executive decision because I'm not listening to that garbage.
Five long years.
I'm texting him right now to say the same thing, that the Patriots, Patriots record is eye candy. That's really interesting about Urban Meyer. And I totally, and of course, I 100% believe Zach.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Zach's not somebody who's just throwing stuff out there to see if it sticks. And Urban Meyer is someone who absolutely has very great football coach, not a lot of accountability or a lot of belief in this denial.
That grumpy old guy sitting over there.
Also, I actually, you know, this whole coaching cycle, I all go geography, and Urban Meyer, geography-wise, perfectly fits for Penn State. Lane Kiffin's not coming up to central Pennsylvania. Urban Meyer would be comfortable there.
Let's take a quick break because I don't want to shortchange Pete McCarthy from his headlines. He's bringing us some gems this morning. We had no idea that J.J. McCarthy had an alter ego until Pete joined us. So we'll get to Pete McCarthy in just a moment. And interesting about that Penn State opening, Pearl. You heard what Zach said. Brian Hartline, the offensive coordinator for Ohio State, and then Eli Drinkwitz would kind of be his top two candidates. Could be a few more that make sense.
Well, he also brought up a great point. The war for Sam Levitt is going to be crazy, the Arizona State quarterback. And Kenny Dillingham is also an awesome coach, but I think if Oregon loses their quarterback, Sam Levitt will just jump right up there and be amazing. So you don't think about that in the coaching carousel. Can you bring a quarterback with you? That's never thought about that in college football. Now that might be a thing.
Well, I thought Matt Rhule was going to bring Dylan Raiola to Penn State, but obviously that's not a thing. And what about DJ Lagway? He's going to probably be someone sought after as well. No, not Napier, but just
the coach. Yeah, exactly. But the coach quarterback combo, like Kenny Dillingham can say, hey, I got a quarterback. By the way, on Kenny Dillingham, our good friend Quincy Avery, quarterback trainer, he really knows offensive football. He said he's the Kenny Dillingham super fan. He says he is the man. We haven't heard that name, but that is a really good one.
Okay, a lot there from Zach Gelb, so appreciate him jumping on with us this morning. Again, we'll come back. Pete's got headlines and all the latest from yesterday that we missed. It's the Maggie Perloff Show.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I can rap like right now?
Yeah, go ahead, man.
Yo, so I got it from the bottom.
We're gonna get him out of here. He wasn't never mountain shit anyway. He couldn't do nothing for our label.
It's gonna be a good day with Maggie and Perloff.
Famous times when people hung up on guests. That was Drewski hanging up on Chance the Rapper. In the last segment, we just hung up on Zach Gelb when he tried to brag about the Patriots.
I don't understand the background of this Drewski Chance the Rapper story.
EJ, you're gonna have to tell me in the break. He cut him off immediately because he was like, "You suck."
Oh, yeah. He just hates it. Why'd he have him on his show?
Because he's being a comedian. It's a bit.
But Zach Gelb joined us in the last segment because he broke some news about Urban Meyer being interested in the Penn State job. And Urban Meyer's now denied it, but Zach had the report that, you know, officials from Penn State had met with Urban Meyer, but they didn't like his approach to NIL. And so ultimately Penn State passed on Urban Meyer. Clearly that's a blow to Urban Meyer's, like, you know, ego, brand, whatever. And so now Urban Meyer's trying to deny it, but obviously we back up our guy Zach Gelb through and through. Let's get to Pete McCarthy, who's got headlines for us this morning. What's up, Pete?
Yeah, 5 days ago, the Spurs, as we pivot to the NBA, they were 5-0, and it was a fair question. Is Victor Wembanyama the best player in the NBA right now? Dude is still just 21 years old. Well, Wemby was tripped up on Sunday. He scored only 9 points against the Suns. They double-teamed him incessantly, and it wasn't much better for Wemby last night. Held to 19 points on 5 of 14 shooting with 5 turnovers in a loss to the Lakers in Los Angeles. The Lakers also doubled Wemby. Wemby said the game feels fast right now and that we got stalled out sometimes. We're learning. Do we consider this a normal developmental step for an ascending star, or is there a book on Wemby now?
Well, kind of, right? We'll see how he adjusts to the adjustment, because the adjustment, Pearl, is you're sending double teams, as Pete just lined out, but it's not even necessarily with your biggest guys on the court. Like last night, Rui Hachimura's got some size, but like Marcus Smart was really harassing Victor Wembanyama last night, and he's obviously not even, Wembanyama's 2 feet taller than him.
Tall guys hate when muscular guys get underneath him in a low man wins kind of football situation. But it's funny, you said, is this a normal development for a star? I don't know. Like, what's a normal development for a 7'7 guy who can cross you over and hit a three? Like, what's the book on this? How do you develop that guy? Like, a super fast Yao Ming? I have no idea. There's no normal book on Victor Wembanyama. But
that's true.
Tall guys, you get a muscular guy into them, they hate it. So that has got to be the book, and that makes sense. I'm surprised the Lakers figured this out before everyone else did, but well, I think he's got to adjust.
The Suns kind of did
banging
it.
You.
The Suns kind of did it first, then J.J. Redick kind of took it to the next level.
Okay.
So you got the Houston Rockets up next on Friday, so we'll see what Ime Udoka has in store for Wemby.
I mean, that's why Wemby wants to go outside so much. You know, like, Wemby's much more comfortable. Like me, as a tall, skinny person, I love hanging out by the three-point line because it sucks to get hit.
Do you? I can just imagine. I just looked over at Perloff for a second, sits to my left. Like, you at your height, but just, like, with the wingspan of Wemby, how insane that would look. What's his wingspan? It's, like, almost 8 feet long, no? You said, like, guys like
Perloff
me.
Perloff is also, like, a foot shorter than Wembanyama.
A foot and a half.
I know.
Good heavens.
I'm not sure. Yeah, that visual is in your head. That's a weird visual.
Be knuckle dragon.
I'd have to wear the Kyle Kuzma sweater to make that work.
It would fit you, though.
It would. Yeah. You know, Perloff, Wemby, similar games.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Actually, I do play a little like Wemby.
I've heard that.
Except for the dunks.
Yeah.
That's where it stops.
And how about the blocks?
Yeah, I'm a great shot blocker because I play
really?
With. Yeah, I play with old slow guys like me. Yeah, shot blocking has always been the one thing I can do because everyone's like, "Oh, I could take it right at this guy."
What's your vertical?
But I'm tall.
What's your vertical?
Nothing.
-3 inches.
Yeah, vertical. Yeah, what's the opposite of vertical? It's horizontal.
Your horizontal.
What's my horizontal? Is a better
Perloff
question.
Perloff sees a world-renowned orthopedist like twice a week.
Yeah, what's your broad jump? That's the opposite.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, I've never had a vertical or any speed, so my game is honed perfectly for this body.
Hey, you never showed us the photo of you and the Dartmouth guys. Did we see that last week?
No.
I don't think you found it.
I found it on the internet, yeah.
All right, send it around. Pete, what else we got?
So I mentioned that Alexander Ovechkin became the first NHL player to reach 900 goals last night, and we expertly transitioned that back to football talk with Joe Flacco, as we're all trained to do. But there is an aspect of that goal that I do want to address. So as we know, sports memorabilia is all the rage. So you would think that the puck that Ovechkin scored his 900th goal might be worth a little something. Mm-hmm. Well, Blues goaltender Jordan Binnington may have diminished its value a little bit. Binnington gave up the goal last night. He then flicked the puck up into his glove with the stick. He took his hand out of his blocker and grabbed the puck. Binnington then put the puck into the back of his pants.
Oh.
It was only after
Was he kidding?
I don't know. He did not speak with the media after the game, so nobody really knows what his intent was here.
I know
but
what his intent was.
Binnington,
I think we can read between the lines there, Pete. I think he was wiping his butt with that puck.
Well, he left it in there. It was only after an official, a linesman, went up to Binnington that he then dug around in his pants. It took about 10 seconds, and he finally located the puck, I guess, and handed it to that poor official.
There was a lot of crosses there.
Was he just trying to make money off this puck? Is that what was happening? Was he going to sell this?
I think he was sending a message, like, I'm going to defile this puck that is going to be so, you know, like, oh, you got a milestone on me. I'm going to put my butt cheeks on it.
No, forget that. I'm going to make $2,500 on eBay real quick.
Yeah, NHL players don't make a lot of money. That is one of the most bizarre efforts I've ever seen. I saw the video of him. He's sneaking off like he looks like a kid who just stole a cookie. He's like trying to sneak into the corner away from the goal. I think he was trying to sell this damn thing on eBay.
Would you rather make money this way or with illegal, you know, poker games with Chauncey Billups?
And that's Jordan Binnington's only two ways to make money. The guy's a world-class goalie.
In hockey, man, we're not talking about an NFL left tackle here, man.
Let's Google Jordan Binnington.
$6 million a year.
Yeah, guys, he's not in the poorhouse. And also, there's, 35 cameras at every NHL game? He thought he was going to get away with it.
Well, that's how he got busted. He might have gotten away with it, you know, many years ago. But,
$6 million?
Yeah, not now. But I was thinking of Doug Mickiewicz. Remember?
Yeah.
The 2004 curse-ending baseball in his back pocket and then apparently had it in his glove and he gave it to his wife and her purse and, after many years, he donated the ball to the Baseball Hall of Fame, but he held on to that thing for a while.
I had forgotten about that. I remember, and did Anthony Rizzo put the ball in his back pocket also with the Cubs? I think he got the final out and put it in his back pocket. But you also think it's maybe for, like, to just hold on to it because you're about to be in, like, a dog pile for the next 15 minutes and you don't want to lose the ball.
This is crazy. I'm reading this story. The coaches and the players would not talk after the game. Because everybody was asking, trying to find out what Binnington was doing.
He was trying to steal it.
He's got to be insane if he thought he could steal it.
He
makes
$6 million. He makes, you know, third-string shooting guard money.
Everyone want to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Like, he's not in with the mob, I don't think.
But it'd be easier to fence a stolen jewels from Paris than this 900th goal. Like, hey, out of nowhere, Bill from Canada has a 900th puck. How would you prove that?
Maybe he's in with the Russian mob. Maybe the Russians wanted the puck. It's Alexander Ovechkin, damn it.
I thought Binnington's American, no?
Canadian.
He was the goalie for the World, the Hockey World Cup, whatever we called it.
Listen, if the Kremlin's after you, then I would do anything to make sure I keep everything intact.
Four Nations Cup.
You must get this puck or your family will die.
Maybe he just wanted to hand it to Ovechkin himself.
Yeah, okay.
Right? In his sweaty jock strap.
It is bizarre.
What a nice guy.
How do we not know what the hell is going on with this?
We got to watch the Dodgers championship parade to see if Tommy Edman tried to sneak away from the pile with the ball in his hand. Just like Binnington looks so sneaky if you see him skating to the side. It is hysterical.
Woo-hoo-hoo, nothing over here.
I mean, your theory that he was trying to denigrate the puck, I don't know if that makes sense. I mean, so he let up a goal to Alex Ovechkin. I mean, so have 899 others. In fact, he's let up 5 goals to Ovechkin, I just read.
Yeah, I get it, but I thought it was something like a competitive thing.
Henrik Lundqvist has given up goals to that guy.
We understand, but maybe it was like a competitive thing. Like, oh, you're
going to get Patrick Roy gave a goal to that guy.
I'm watching now the celebrations on our TV here, and like they're all celebrating like they just won the Stanley Cup. It's been a really big Alexander Ovechkin. He's killing these milestones the last couple of years. So maybe Binnington was like, all right, well, I'm not going to be celebrating this guy. I'm going to wipe this puck on my butt.
It's first month of the season. He doesn't care if he let up a goal to Alexander Ovechkin.
You're an odd competitor, Maggie Gray.
Well, I'm just saying. I'm just saying you guys don't want it bad enough. Am I an odd competitor or are you guys just soft? Because if you're not willing to rub a hockey puck on your butt, then I don't think I want you guys as teammates.
Well, listen, money is tight. I would definitely try and steal that puck if I was that dude.
You have a good point, though. It seems easier to steal the jewels from the Louvre than it is to.
Yeah. Speaking of jewels.
Yeah.
I mean, what if he just said, all over the after he retires, he emerges, hey, look what I got for sale. And I forgot. It got stuck in my pads. My bad.
It's a little wet. My bad.
Oh. You think you can do that? Just be like, oh, this? Oh, my gosh. I didn't realize I had this.
That 900. I mean, imagine if he tried to get away with the one where he broke Gretzky with. That would have been. That's a valuable.
Can you imagine all that sweat on that puck, too? You know how much goalie sweat?
Goalies the most sweatiest athletes.
No.
Ooh.
That's a great question.
When they take off that mask, it is always shopping.
The amount of pads and a helmet and
I don't have personal experience, but a hockey locker room, that's the smelliest of all the sports locker rooms.
No
right?
like doubt.
The equipment just holds everything.
Easily smelliest locker room. Although football locker rooms also stink, but they're bigger because there's so many guys. Generally, space is just a little bit bigger.
And obviously, football guys sweat a lot, too, heavily padded.
All right, who's the least sweatiest? Less stinkiest?
You know, I'm going to disagree with you. I don't think that it's hockey goalies. I think it's like a tennis player at the Australian Open when it's like 100 degrees on the court.
John McEnroe over here just had to make it about tennis.
You know what, though? Like, they always kind of look like Joker always looks calm and collected despite the heat. I think it's remember Tom Training. Brady tell the story about the Buck center who's like the undercarriage was all wet? Football players are pretty, pretty sweaty.
I just think every time I watch Mighty Ducks and Goldberg takes off his mask and pads, he just looks like he's been under a lot.
There you go.
And that's exactly what Jordan Binnington was going through last night.
Exactly. I love every time I watch Mighty Ducks, like you pull it up every 3 months. Is that might be true?
Probably, right? I love the 90s. Goldberg's a sweaty, sweaty kid.
Just that monthly watch of the Mighty Ducks, as one does. Thank you, Pete. We'll hear from you next hour. Coming up next, award-winning journalist Ian O'Connor is going to join us to talk football.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.